I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
You know what? I always wanted, my whole life, I always wanted my voice to sound like yours. I realised that when you were talking, I was like, I just loved your, we always call it a dirty laugh, which is so awful of the English and sexist. My mother, she was like, you have to hear this actress laugh. She was like, she's the dirtiest laugh I've ever heard. And she introduced me to your laugh.
It is a dirty laugh. My dad and my mother both had dirty laughs, so I've got the genetic coding for filthy laughter.
Double dirty, yeah.
Uh-huh. Hello, I'm Minnie Driver. I've always loved Proust's questionnaire. It was originally a 19th century parlour game where players would ask each other 35 questions aimed at revealing the other player's true nature. In asking different people the same set of questions, you can make observations about which truths appear to be universal. And it made me wonder, what if these questions were just the jumping off point? What greater depths would be revealed if I asked these questions as conversation starters? So I adapted Proust's questionnaire, and I wrote my own 7 questions that I personally think are pertinent to a person's story. They are, when and where were you happiest? What is the quality you like least about yourself? What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you? What question would you most like answered? What person, place, or experience has shaped you the most? What would be your last meal? And can you tell me something in your life that's grown out of a personal disaster? And I've gathered a group of really remarkable people, ones that I am honored and humbled to have had the chance to engage with. You may not hear their answers to all 7 of these questions. We've whittled it down to which questions felt closest to their experience or the most surprising or created the most fertile ground to connect. My guest today is the actor, activist and podcaster Jameela Jamil. Jameela started out presenting on UK television and radio and then found her way onto the brilliant and extremely successful comedy The Good Place. During the pandemic, she began a podcast called I Weigh with Jameela Jamil, which is a conversational, female-focused podcast exploring body positivity, racial inclusivity, and much more. The thing I love best about Jameela is that she is a voice. While most celebrities have a certain curated presentation of opinions in these times of rampant cancellation, Jameela stands by her voice, her advocacy of women, and the need for changing the way women are passed by society. She is unaffectedly raw, funny, and herself, a rare force of nature. In your life, can you tell me where and when you were happiest?
Oh, okay. Where and when was I happiest? It was, I think, Thanksgiving, and a friend photographed this moment, and now I've got it forever. I could send it to you. But I was cuddling on the sofa with my boyfriend of 9 years and our 2 dogs. And everything was the most peaceful it's ever been in my life. I am the most grown up I have ever been, thank God, considering I am significantly older. And I had no worries or problems in that moment. I was just surrounded by everything I love. Everything was soft and loving and wonderful. And I'm so glad that that moment is captured. And I'm laughing hysterically in the photo. And I can see that it's genuine happiness. There's so many smiles I've done for photographs on red carpets or at work or even at other people's parties. And I can see in my eyes that I'm faking it. And I would say the happiest moment of my life has just happened. And hopefully it will lead to many more.
Or do you think there's like a pack mentality in that? That snuffle of dogs, you.
Yeah, in a scrum.
I think it's tribal.
Yeah.
That feeling of like being in something and that nothing could harm you, nothing could penetrate that. And it's, I find you can only be purely present with dogs as well.
Yeah.
Lovers, it's a different story, but dogs, they require complete presence.
It just like, my happiness equates, I think, genuinely to my sort of dopamine and my cortisol levels, you know, cortisol being the kind of stress hormone. Like dogs, cuddles, affection, laughter, these things lower my cortisol levels and they increase my dopamine levels. And I've started to look at myself as a sort of neurochemical computer and now focus only in every area of life of, is it going to bring me cortisol or is it going to bring me dopamine? Because that's how I decide. That's how I make almost every decision now. Is not based on how impressive it's going to make me or how thin I'm going to become or all the different stupid fucking metrics that we have. I'm deciding everything based on the neurochemicals it's going to release in my brain because therein lies happiness.
I absolutely love that. The chemical decisions. Mm-hmm. Is this going to bring me cortisol? Is this going to bring me dopamine? So I just had all my blood work done the other day because things have felt kind of out of balance. And it turns out that I am completely and utterly negative DHEA, which you might know.
No, I don't know.
Balances your adrenal system. So basically, all I'm doing is pumping cortisol around my body. But my understanding is if you don't have any DHEA, which I think balances and calms that, you're only going to be in fight or flight panic mode, which is essentially when something tricky happens, I pull in every other tricky, awful thing and it turns into a kind of panic sandwich. And it was really interesting to go, look, that might be part of my mental makeup, but there is also a full-blown chemical reason behind that. And I love the notion of like encouraging, is this going to make me feel good or is this going to make me feel stressed?
Yeah. I had a blood test result come back yesterday that showed that I still have low DHEA, but I didn't know what it was. And I thought to myself, God, I'm not even aware of when my adrenals are activated because I've been activated since I was born, probably. You know, I've been so stressed for so long that I don't really remember what peace feels like. So now when I get kind of snapshots of it, like I did.
Well, you've got a literal picture of that now. Yeah.
I'm getting it framed so it can remind me to always seek out that moment.
I think it's a brilliant thing just generally to be able to identify what increases a dopamine response and what increases stress. It's not always possible to cut out the stuff that is stressful, but I do think you can focus on the stuff that is good and head towards that consciously or like on your weekend when you're not in an office.
Well, you know, I've been having like a sort of existential, not breakdown, but breakthrough, I would say. In the last year, we spoke about it on the phone, you and I, where I was telling you that I've like suddenly had this huge, like, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I living somewhere so expensive? Why am I working too hard and spending less time with my dogs and my boyfriend and my friends? That moment epitomized like me feeling like, oh, I fucking smashed it in life. More than any award I've ever won, more than any accolade I've ever had, more than any set I've ever been on, that moment was just my like, this is my Academy Award. Like, this is what I've been striving towards. And now I'm like furiously chasing that feeling where I'm so lucky to do the job that I do. But the amount that people work and feel encouraged to work and the way that we have bastardized the idea of discipline, but only discipline towards one thing and not discipline towards happiness and mental health and physical health, I think is just fucked. And so I've decided to take that into my own hands and now seek pleasure, not as an indulgence, but as a necessity.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to needlepoint that on a pillow.
Well, especially as women, we're taught that everything is like, you're lucky if you enjoy it. You're lucky if you have a good time. You're lucky if you come during sex. Like, it's like, oh, what a king. What a god. I got to also have an orgasm. Like, it's amazing the way that it has been like somehow rebranded as an indulgence, as an extra. as an if you're lucky. Mm. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We're sort of shamed out of the pursuit of any kind of pleasure. And so that's why I've decided to completely shift my adventure.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you?
Oh, God, what a great question. It's a pathetic answer to say my dog, isn't it?
No, it's not pathetic. It is not. Your answers are not pathetic. They are your answers. And this is a judgment-free zone.
Because the reason I say this is, A, because my firstborn dog, Barold, and I have a spiritual connection. I don't care what anyone says. We have known each other in other lives. He just gets me. I get him. We have these long staring sessions between the two of us. And dogs don't really like to make eye contact with people, but he just wants to stare in my eyes. And I believe, which shows that I'm clearly still crazy, that we are telepathically communicating. Like, I really, and this is the sort of thing that will be like clipped and then there'll be a headline as if I'm completely serious. Obviously, my boyfriend. That is a meaningful and extraordinary love. But this dog and human relationship is just completely ridiculous. I can't explain it. I think it's the fact that something can be a different species to me and I don't get anything back from him, right? He shits and I pick it up and all the labor is coming from my end. You know, we talk about their unconditional love for us. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm the one putting in all of the work here and doing all of the feeding and paying the rent and doing everything. But, oh God, the way that I could love something that is a different species from me has really shocked me because I was not an animal person until I had him.
Oh, really?
Not at all. Not at all. Not interested. Didn't give a shit.
So it was just him?
Just him specifically.
And how did you find him?
He was gifted to me during the pandemic by someone who knew of this doggy who needed a home. And so he was given to me.
But why do they think of you, the legendary animal disliker?
I wasn't an animal disliker. I was just indifferent. But I think that I...
So many questions.
Because I'd had a nervous breakdown. All right, Minnie? I had a nervous breakdown.
And they wanted to make you feel better. They were like, a dog. Let's see if this will help. Jamila, let's see.
And also, to be like perfectly candid, my boyfriend also was thinking that maybe we should have children together, which I don't know why you would ever think that after spending time with me. But he did. And I was very against the idea of having children. And I think he wanted to see if it would bring out something maternal in me. Mm. So I think that was also part of the agenda. But then having a dog was so hard that he didn't want children anymore after having a dog.
Oh my God. So it actually worked out for everybody.
I win everything. I am God's favourite. It all worked out in my favour, and I got this extraordinary puppy that I completely fell in love with.
So it was a puppy when you got it. That's why it was so hard, because it is a bit like having a newborn.
Yeah, it really is. But my relationship with my dog is the most unexpected, strange and brilliant love. And I really struggle with being perceived. I don't like to be perceived, which is so ridiculous because I've put myself in an industry where I'm constantly subjected to perception. And it is my fault, just to be clear. I have subjected myself to constant scrutiny and perception, and yet I hate it. And I don't want to be looked at, and I don't want to be observed. And what I feel about the dog is that he's just never judging.
Because he's not.
He doesn't care what I look like. He doesn't know what I'm supposed to look like or not supposed to look like. He doesn't care what I think or if I'm clumsy or if I'm tired and boring. There's still a feeling in any romantic relationship or friendship of expectation that I don't feel with the dog. And it doesn't mean that I don't show up for him, but it just means that the markers are very different. You know, I still have to be some sort of sexy and some sort of attractive in front of my partner. I don't have to do that in front of a dog.
Listen, you don't have to convince me that it is one of the greatest loves of all with a dog.
Yeah, it could never be a fictional one because I don't feel like I've yet found a fictional representation of what I consider to be a love that I relate to. You know, like my idea of love is so the opposite of what Hollywood sold to us as romance and love, you know, and I think it really fucked us up and gave us really unhealthy ideals. And, you know, I thought I wasn't in love with my boyfriend because I had no adrenaline. You know, I had no fight or flight. I had no panic. My appetite was fine. I was sleeping well. And then I heard this Nat King Cole song that I then played to him because he felt the same way. We just kept on being like, are we just friends who are shagging? We couldn't understand what this bond was or why we didn't want to leave each other's side, but we also didn't feel ostensibly, quote unquote, in love with each other. Hmm. And then I played him this song by Nat King Cole called This Can't Be Love, in which he sings about this exact phenomena of like, well, this can't be love because I feel too well. I'm eating, I'm sleeping great. I mean, I clearly like you. I love to be where you are, but like, I'm not in love with you because it's ridiculous. I don't feel panicked all the time. And that song was whistleblowing that we are being fed romantic bullshit and that actually real love. And I'm more in love with James now than I was 9 years ago. And I would have missed out on that fucking relationship because I was trained to think that the person who gives me anxiety
is the one who you actually love.
That my body is telling me to fucking run away from. I'm going, oh, wow, this is the one.
Oh, this is it.
Yeah, this is it.
He's going to ruin me.
Yeah.
This is exactly what I want. Yeah.
So I don't believe in the bad boy. I believe in the nice person. And I want to be with someone who makes me feel calm.
I couldn't agree with you more. I have found exactly the same person in that dynamic.
Totally.
And it was a little bit later.
But it's fucking boring to watch. So that's why. No one would ever want to watch this love story about me and James, who just had a really lovely, safe time forever.
Yeah. I want to ask you really quickly, just going back to your dog.
Oh, yeah.
Not that I don't love James, but I want to get back to your dog. Have you ever thought of getting those communication pads where, you know, they hit a thing like, Mum, walk now, bitch?
No, only because I worry it would break this idea I have that he loves me too. Because what if he's just like, cunt, 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 cunt. You look ugly today. And then I realize he is judging me.
Don't you understand? You create the communication pad yourself and it just says bliss, love, beautiful.
No, that's too,
mommy,
that's too controlling. No, I can't monitor what he's saying. I would love to. I always think it would be really funny. Also, my dog wouldn't learn. I was told by a trainer that he has a low desire to please. And I was like, that's my baby. He got that from me.
By the way, I have a similar dog. He's an absolute arse. I love him to pieces. He actually has very few dog-like qualities.
Yeah.
I can't wait to meet them.
And my other dog is amazing as well. But I'm just saying I've known Barold for much longer.
Barold. Like Harold, but Barold.
Yes. So I have a friend who's English and so posh that she thought, when I wanted to call him Barry, because that's my favourite name, she was like, oh, Barry, is that short for Barold? And no. I was like, well, it is now.
What question would you most like answered?
Oh, fuck me. Does anyone enjoy reverse cowgirl?
You know what? I'm going to get a lot of very interesting letters.
No, because I know the people I think who are receiving it do, but I mean, enjoy doing it. Does anyone enjoy doing reverse cowgirl?
Maybe.
There are other questions in life.
There are other questions. I mean, I'll take that as a very practical one, and I'm sure...
What kind of other questions have you had?
You know, what happens when you die?
Oh, yeah!
Are there aliens?
We can do this again. No, we can do this again.
No.
I hadn't pre-read these questions.
It.
I'm sorry.
No. Jamila, you don't understand. That is a great, great answer. And the silence afterwards is only because I've basically been bludgeoned with the regular answers. And that really is a very good question. And I look forward to people saying, yes, I enjoy it.
But then why? We need a why. I don't want to know just yes or no.
Maybe because they have a really nice bottom and they love it being looked at.
Okay. Okay, well, that's not me. You know, and I also really hate exercise. I hate bouncing up and down. I hate moving. And then also like the looking back. Are you supposed to do it?
Also, it sort of hurts your neck a little bit, particularly after the age of 50. Like looking back over your shoulders, like, ow, and bouncing. This is a chiropractic nightmare. What is the quality you like least about yourself?
Oh, the quality I like least about myself. I'm quite rude and I'm working on it.
Okay.
I don't mean to hurt people's feelings, but I'm incredibly candid and I see in negatives. So when I listen to something, when I look at something, when I hear something, I can only first identify what's wrong. So I have such a critical brain, but not really in a judgmental way, just in a that's all I can see. I notice these problems and they need to be addressed. And then I can relax and enjoy the rest of the art. And my boyfriend has been teaching me about the shit sandwich, whereas I was doing shit on toast, which is where you say something not nice first, and then you at the end cushion it with something lovely. So I've learned to override my instinct and say something, find something nice to say first, and then deliver my critique. But I really need to work on my delivery.
But here's the thing. I think that's really interesting that you know really clearly that there is this thing that you want to work on. I think it's good that you know that. I do exactly the same thing. I've had to teach myself. You know what's funny with directors? When you're really in it and you've done what you consider to be a good or an interesting or at least a good place to start take, and they come in and they go, that was perfect. That was perfect. Now you need to do this. And this, I realize my brain has been miswired because being told something is perfect, but then being told that we have to carry on and do it is so not helpful. It's so much better. For example, if a director comes in and goes, I really loved the way you made me listen to this section of that speech. I'd really love to feel the same way at the end of that, the end of the scene. Like that is so helpful and so brilliant because it's not unclear.
Yeah.
And I like that your boyfriend has said very clearly, you need to work on your shit sandwich, not your shit on toast.
Yeah.
It's a vile analogy, but also really good.
It is graphic, but it has really, really helped me. And everyone said I've come a really long way in the last few years.
Everyone says I'm so much better.
Yeah, I called an actor turned sort of pundit or politician type figure. I said publicly that he looked like a freshly wanked cock.
Oh my God, you did not say that.
I did. That was a personal attack. Now, he's not a nice man. He says horrible, hateful things.
Right.
But I just lowered myself to his level and then some because I delivered what was not, it's not funny.
It's not funny and it might also not be not true. However.
That is subjective because the wanked cock is in the eye of the beholder is what I've learned. But, and that's the clip. From this podcast.
Well, that's also now another thing to get needle pointed on a pillow.
Yeah.
The wanked cock is in the eye of the beholder.
But either way, why say it like that? It didn't do me any favours in the long run.
By the way, here's me now immediately giving you advice. I want to read that sentence in a book. I don't want you to be attacked for saying that, but me reading that in a book makes me laugh so uncontrollably. And you have such a brilliant turn of phrase. I do think that perhaps that is the distance that you're going to require, is that you can put all those thoughts down. Then an editor can go through and go, well, I'm not tethering that to an actual person, but that's a brilliant observation about a human.
Yeah, well, there you go. I think he was being mean about fat people or something, and I wanted to be like, who are you to criticize the way that anyone looks? But then I'm still doing it. I'm still participating. So growing up, a little bit late, but I was, to be fair, crazy. So I think that that is a slight get out of jail free card. It's not, but I really was crazy for a really long time. And because I was famous, nobody told me. And so I was a little bit late to the development game, and I'm getting there. And I think I'm making up good time.
Well, here we are.
But I'm trying to get to a better place before I turn 40.
Great. You've got a year.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
In your life, what person, place, or experience most altered your life?
Oh, person, place, or experience. I've got two good ones. Am I only allowed to choose one?
No, you can tell us both and then we'll choose which one's the best.
Okay, there you go. That feels good. All right. I was hit by a car at 17, just before I was 17, and I broke my back, and it completely changed my life for the obvious reasons, because it interrupted my life. But also it meant that I had this sense of perspective for the rest of my existence that has been unshakable, that I do not sweat the small stuff. And there's a certain extent to which I allow myself to be neurotic, but generally I have a very strong and overwhelming idea that essentially everything's going to be okay. Like, my metric is that as long as I can pee on my own, I've smashed it. And so it's given me a very simple metric to meet my whole life, where I didn't need to impress anyone particularly. I didn't need to do anything extraordinary. I just wanted to be able to pee on my own. And it has led to being in an industry that can really devastate people because of the expectation, and given me a fairly level head. I was hit by one car into another car.
Wow.
You know, it's just like flipping around all over the road and hamstered like a pancake. And I survived, which is a miracle. And it just reframed the rest of my life. It made me very unafraid of failure. And it made me feel very obsessive about making the most of everything. And so that doesn't make me a great adventurer. You know, I haven't climbed mountains, etc. Obviously, my attitude to reverse cowgirl sort of sets us up for not a very literally adventurous mentality. But I want to just fucking soak up people and life and food and experiences. Mm. And I think that I owe that to that very early clusterfuck.
It really
went down like a fucking barrel of shit, but that was fine. I would not be the woman I am today if it were not for that time. It was also an extraordinary year, and I was so happy because I was on morphine, which is heroin, really. And I was watching television all day, and it was the golden years of film and TV. And I was eating ice cream all day because when you're completely fucked, everyone just brings you comfort food. So it was thrilling. When people go like, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm always like, it was the greatest year of my life. Mm. So that is my main defining one.
Okay, so what would be your last meal?
My last meal would be chops and chips.
What kind of chops? Pork or lamb?
Lamb chops.
Lammers,
chops and chips.
But with like mint sauce and ketchup with the chips?
No, I hate ketchup. Hate ketchup. I despise it. Despise a condiment that isn't, other than mustard. Mustard has managed to seep through, but I don't like anything that's a big sauce.
So chops and chips, is there a place that you have this or is this something you make? Because I don't think I've ever seen lamb chops. I guess I have seen lamb chops on the menu where you could order a side of fries.
No, I horrify every restaurant that has them with my order. I guess it's like a Greek restaurant who has chips available for the Neanderthal English people who come in and don't want their delicious lemon potatoes. But I am said Neanderthal. And so
who likes chips?
I just fucking love chips. I need to eat them with everything.
I love chips too.
I have chips with every meal that I can. They are a key part of my diet because when I had anorexia, I never ate chips. Mm. And so now I'm determined to make up for some lost time within, you know, reason so that I can make sure I give myself those things that I had demonized. But as a child, my grandparents used to take me because I grew up in Spain. And so we used to go up into the mountains and there would be a special restaurant that had chops and chips, lamb chops and chips. And there's just something about that combination that reminds me of a really happy, simple time in my life. It's a simple meal and it's just delicious and salty. So that's my favorite. That's my favorite thing.
Yum, I don't even eat meat and that sounds good to me.
It's fucking wonderful. I know I should be a vegetarian or a vegan.
No, you shouldn't. No. I won't have
people
it.
People say I'm a bad feminist because I eat animals.
No, we're not here to, like you literally just said, this thing that not only delights you in terms of the food, but the memory of it with your grandparents in the mountains in Spain, this beautiful image.
And it wasn't even them. They were horrible people. It was just, they were.
You know what I'm learning about you?
What?
Is that you are more than maybe anyone I've ever met. You can create the most beautiful image and then it's almost that you can't help but douse it with the most awful bile. Three seconds later,
oh my God, you have to talk to James.
You're so incredibly articulate and you create these images that are so beautiful, but then it's almost like you can't just allow it to be. You have to douse it with something painful.
It's with the truth. It was just a happy time in my life, right?
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
A happy time in my life. I loved living in Spain. It was a simple existence. It was sunshine and sandy beaches and I didn't know anything about politics or, you know, sexual violence or I had no self-consciousness. I thought having a big belly was the most extraordinary thing on earth. Like I would push it out as much as possible. Like it was just such a pure time and that taste immediately takes me back to that pure mindset of I have no problems and life is beach.
It's Proustian. It's lovely.
Yeah.
Life is beach. Life is chops.
Yeah, life is beach and chops and chips.
Mini Questions is hosted and written by me, Minnie Driver. Executive produced by me and Aaron Kaufman, with production support from Jennifer Bassett, Zoe Denkler, and Ali Perry. The theme music is also by me, and additional music by Aaron Kaufman. Special thanks to Jim Nicolay, Addison O'Day, Henry Driver, Lisa Castella,
Anik Oppenheim, Anik Muller, and Annette Wolf at WKPR, Will Pearson, Nikki Etor, Morgan Lavoie, and Mangesh Hatikador.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.